The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Yeah, don't it sound so epic? Horns are screaming, I ain't the one you want to mess with. Use a joke, I ain't the one you want to jest with. The battle's coming, you only got a few seconds to run.
Hello, this is Matt Minnick from Cincy Jungle here for Chalk Talk. Today, I've got a great guest. We are in the midst of draft season, which means we are all busy working on our mock drafts. And today, we've got an expert in mock drafts, Benjamin Robinson from Grinding the Mocks. Benjamin, how are you doing today?
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. So appreciate you joining us. So if you could talk to us a little bit about your website and kind of what the methodology behind it is.
Yeah, so Grinding the Mocks is a project that I've been working on for the past few years that basically takes kind of an analytical view of the NFL draft by analyzing mock drafts as data. And this kind of all began basically during the night of the 2018 draft, you know, the Baker Mayfield draft, the Billy Price draft for the Bengals. And I went to college in Pittsburgh, and so I was hanging out with one of my best college friends. He's a huge Steelers fan, and we love watching the draft together because it's something where we can kind of be on equal footing that night, because everyone, for the most part, should feel like a winner when their team is drafting. And we were watching the analysts, and they were saying that there was some player that was selected and that it was a reach. Or they were saying, you know, hey, this player got selected, and that's a huge value. And so I asked him, my buddy, you know, how do we know that that's actually a reach if we really don't know where a player is expected to go? And so analysts, you know, have their big boards, but that's just one big board. So I was thinking, and I thought, well, mock drafts, someone could kind of wrangle them all together, you know, that could be quite a thing. And I looked around to see if this had kind of already existed out in the world, and it didn't. And so using mock drafts from the 2018 draft, I built kind of a proof of concept, and I looked at some of the results, and I thought, this is really interesting, and there's a lot of things that we can learn from analyzing mock drafts about the whole entire draft process, in addition to potentially trying to also see what kind of predictive value mock drafts have in predicting the draft. So it's been a really fun journey to be on, and I call it Grinding the Mocks because, as you know, people who watch film on players are often grinding the tape. And I'm not a film guy, but I thought it'd be fun to call it Grinding the Mocks because sometimes it does feel like a little bit of a grind.
I got you. Yeah, that's awesome. Everybody should definitely follow Benjamin on Twitter. He puts out some really cool graphics, and lots of times in conversations about a draft pick, he'll just kind of pop in with, hey, this is how his draft position has changed over time. So some really interesting stuff. Great follow. What is your Twitter handle?
Yeah, so I'm at BENJ_Robinson2. You know, very easy to remember.
There you go. So yeah, definitely give him a follow there. So how has it panned out over the last couple of years? What type of external validity does your site and your sequencing to have?
Yeah. So you know, one of the things that I first wanted to see when I, you know, calculated all these different players' expected draft position, that's what I call the metric, expected draft position. Sometimes I call it EDP. And, you know, I looked at them and I said, well, hey, let's look at the players' player-by-player ranking of expected draft position, and let's look at how it kind of relates to actual draft position, because that's something I thought would be really interesting. And I didn't expect the expected draft position to exactly explain 100% of the actual draft position, though it does occasionally hit on players directly. And so what I did was I looked at kind of how much of the differences in the, we call it variation in statistics, of the variation in the expected draft position, how much of it explains actual draft position. And it turns out that when you do a little bit of the math, about 80% of the variation in actual draft positions is explained by expected draft position, like the very basic metric. And so I found this to be really interesting. And, you know, in the world of like the draft community, specifically with the huge focus on the first round, it doesn't always look really good. And so if you try to predict the first round of the draft, with each player, just lining up their expected draft position, you'll probably end up being disappointed in some way, because mock drafters can sometimes, you know, be a little lazy. And so a lot of the times we know that there's lots of trades in the NFL draft, and we don't always do a good job of projecting how many trades there are going to be. There's some teams that you think aren't going to make trades that do make trades, and teams that you expect to make trades that don't. And so you're probably never going to be exactly right. But to me, the more important thing is finding the sweet spot where we can look at a range of expected outcomes for a player and not view the draft as a zero-sum game, like either you got the prediction right or wrong. And so to me, I'm trying to kind of advance the conversation in an analytical way about how we view the draft, just through data. And people can be kind of very defensive, but for the most part, I think people also realize that every player, just like in the draft, has, just like in their career, has a range of expected outcomes. So for example, Joe Burrow has a whole range of outcomes that we could see in his career that are dependent on a whole lot of things, but also are dependent on quite a bit of his fundamentals, which are very strong. So just like players can have a whole range of outcomes for their career, like a player could be anywhere from a strong starter to a Pro Bowler. Players also have, you know, if we did the draft like 100 times or something like that, we would expect a player to go anywhere between, you know, a certain draft position and another draft position. And so the draft only happens once. And so, but with mock drafts, we have, you know, thousands of shots to look at what are players' outcomes, and then we can use statistics to kind of get a sense of where they might end up. So to me, there's certain validity, you know, I don't think we're ever going to predict the draft with 100% accuracy, and if so, the draft would be really boring. So to me, the fact that 20% of the draft can't be explained by mock drafts alone is not a surprise to me. And so it's really, really interesting to follow along and say, hey, you know, this player got drafted above expectation. What can we learn from that when we kind of combine his situation with a bunch of other players? What does that say about positions? What does that say about value in certain rounds of the draft? What does that say about specific teams?
It's interesting too, because
interesting.
Yeah, I mean, with mock drafts, it like you were saying, it gives you so much data. Whereas if you were just trying to examine the NFL draft for itself, it only happens once a year. Every year it's a new group of players. Every year the order changes. Every year everybody's coming in with a different roster. So you can't, you know, to try and, you know, generalize what happens in the draft from looking at, you know, the draft over the last 15 years, it's difficult to take anything from that, because every year all those factors change. Having the mock draft, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, you know, that it gives you enough data to actually make it, make some conclusions that you can, you know, take the next step and can, you know, look at it from a predictive model, where I think when every time you do the test, you know, or the draft, the actual draft, all the players, and I'm talking about teams too, but all the players change, all the factors change in it. having these mock drafts allows you to, you know, be a lot more scientific with it. That makes a lot of sense to me. So we talk about, I mentioned how you have charts and they're on your website. Like I said, you'll tweet them out sometimes too. It shows how average draft position of players changes over time. Who are some of the big movers at the combine, and are we missing out on big movers this year with the limited amount of senior days that we got, or pro days, excuse me, that we got?
Yeah, so the combine is really interesting, and I had a similar kind of question that I try to use some of my data to answer. So I wrote a blog post, and it's actually my pinned tweet on my Twitter account. And I wanted to see you had Kent Lee Platy on a while back, right, to talk about mm-hmm. relative athletic scores. So what I did was I looked at and I said, hey, let's try to get an objective measure of athletic performance. And so Kent has done a really nice job with that. So I got some of the data on players' relative athletic scores just from the combine. So if they worked out on the combine, what was their relative athletic score? And I looked 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after the combine for each of the past 3 years, so the years that I have data on. What I saw was really interesting was that, for the most part, players who have kind of what are viewed as elite athleticism, they get the benefit, right? So if you have an elite combine, it's associated with positive changes pre and post combine in terms of average draft position. The elite athletes at this year's combine that really kind of stood out in the data are players, some of which we've heard about quite a bit when it comes to the Bengals. Jeremy Chinn had the biggest move from the safety from Southern Illinois. Ezra Cleveland, offensive tackle from Boise State. Denzel Mims, wide receiver from Baylor. And then a couple other guys, Reggie Robinson, who's a cornerback from Tulsa, who's probably more of a late round guy, but he's like, I think 6 foot, something like that, and ran a 4.44, which is, really great for his size. And I think if you looked at his weight, you would expect him to run like a 4.5 or something like that. And so running a 4.4 at his size is huge. And I think he'll be one of two players from Tulsa who potentially get drafted this year, along with Travis Gibson, who's a defensive end. And then there was another one, Logan Wilson, a linebacker from Wyoming, who actually only had an above average combine, but somehow, he snuck into this top five of guys who had elite combines. And so, for the most part, I think it's kind of an expectations game. So for some of these guys, like Jeremy Chinn, we didn't really know how athletic he was because he plays for Southern Illinois. And so it's hard to tell, given his level of competition, how athletic he actually is. And, we had the Senior Bowl, and that's nice, but now we have actual testing numbers. And it's the same deal with Ezra Cleveland and Denzel Mims, where I think the expectation game was, they're good players, but are they good athletes? And so, for example, someone who had an amazing combine like Henry Ruggs, their draft stock probably doesn't change all that much, relatively speaking, because we already knew Henry Ruggs was fast, and now it's just confirmed. Sure. So mock drafts, you're trying not to double count things for the most part. So if it's new information, I believe that if you have an idea that a player like, for example, Denzel Mims, maybe you think he's an athlete, but maybe not that athletic, and then suddenly he runs like a 4.39, that changes your mind. And that changes people's average draft position when you look 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after the combine.
Yeah, I think that's interesting too, because with these guys, we're not talking about schools that you see on TV every weekend. Don't get me wrong, Baylor, Boise State, competitive teams, well-known in big conference teams. But when you're looking at Tulsa and Southern Illinois, like, these are guys that you're not seeing every Saturday. A lot of that information, many people, obviously the people that are watching the film are watching the film, but some people aren't getting to the Tulsa film right away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So, as we've talked about, we can talk about variation in expected draft position. And I know there are some jokers out there that have the Dolphins somehow getting Joe Burrow, and they have the Bengals taking Chase Young. But I think we know who the Bengals are taking at number one. 33 is a different story. So at 33, we'll take it through a few different kind of scenarios here. Patrick Queen, Kenneth Murray, and I'll throw in Zach Bond too, even though he's truly an edge. But he's a guy that, could potentially play linebacker. We won't get into the value of that compared to playing edge, but those three guys, all popular in the Bengals fandom, and all really have rising draft stock. So with those three, what are the odds that we're gonna have a shot at one of them in the second round?
So yeah, you're right that Bond is kind of his own. He's not definitely your off-ball linebacker, while Murray and Queen have more of those roles. And so Murray, I have a little bit above Queen in terms of expected draft position, but they're both in the 20s, like the early to mid 20s. Mm-hmm. And so I would not expect them to fall into the 33rd pick. And I'm not an advocate of using the limited draft capital that the Bengals do have to trade up in the first round. And they really have never done that, I think, in recent memory, trading into the first round. They've had, they had that draft where they drafted Drake Kirkpatrick, who they, just released today, and Kevin Zeitler, but those were picks that they got from the Raiders for Carson Palmer. Mm-hmm. So I don't view Murray and Queen as likely to be around then. And so to me, Bond is definitely, there's a strong chance, I think, that he's at this present state, that he's available at 33. I think that his expectation is, early second round, but he could sneak into the late first round. I just think that it'll be a numbers game. There's going to be a good number of offensive tackles in the first round. There's going to be a good number of wide receivers in the first round. There's going to be a good number of cornerbacks in the first round, edge rushers, cornerbacks. And so I think in terms of a numbers game, Bond is very talented for sure. And second round is nothing to scoff at, but I think that there's a decent chance that of those three, that he's the one who's likely available.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting because, there's definitely a lot of teams as you get into the 20s that could use a linebacker, but there are a couple teams in particular, such as the Titans, the Ravens, you could even say the Patriots, where you could see Bond being a pretty good fit. So, I was thinking there's a good chance he was going to go in round one, but you think he might be a possibility on day two. That's awesome. How about receiver? I think Denzel Mims, who you mentioned before, very popular with Bengals fans. I'm sure as you can see on your website how drastically his draft stock has risen after the season. And then Justin Jefferson, former teammate of Joe Burrow, is another person who is very popular to mock to the Bengals. But he had a really good combine. He was one that surprised me with how fast he was at the combine. How about those two receivers? What do you think are the odds that one of them makes it into round two?
Yeah, so this is the danger of kind of quote-unquote falling in love with a prospect, is that sometimes over the process, the other people are loving them too. And I think that's what's happened with Mims and Jefferson. That they both, if you had asked me maybe a month ago, do we think that Jefferson and Mims were good options for the Bengals at 33? I would say yeah. But now, I find Jefferson as my wide receiver 4 and Mims as my wide receiver 5. And I think that'll probably switch by the time the draft comes. And so right now I have, 5 wide receivers with, I think, solid first round. And then there's, a couple other guys that could find their way in. So there's 5 to 7 wide receivers potentially in the first round. And I think that the ones that are falling out of the first round potentially, who are trending downward, are T. Higgins and LaVisca Chenault. So Clemson wide receiver Higgins and Colorado, you know, wide receiver slash offensive weapon Chenault. And so those are the more likely, I find, options for the Bengals at 33 than Mims, who's had this dramatic rise. Like I mentioned him as one of my top combine performers in terms of the difference between average draft position pre and post combine. And Jefferson, you're right, had a really nice combine too. He's a slot receiver, so he's a little bit different than some of the other wide receivers that are in the first round. But I think that there's a strong chance that he's in there on the top of the season he had, as well as the combine. So I hate to be the bearer of bad news for people who are fans of Denzel Mims. I am too. And I would not expect him to be around when the Bengals select at 33.
You mentioned a couple guys there. Is Jalen Reagor, is he from Texas Christian? Is he one of those guys that you're expecting to go around one as well?
Round two. Yeah.
Okay.
So the players that the wide receivers that I expect in round one are CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma, Henry Ruggs from Alabama, and this is not in any order, Henry Ruggs from Alabama, Jerry Jeudy from Alabama, Jefferson and Mims, and then potentially it's Higgins and Chenault. But Reagor,
I thought they were dropping out of that seven. They're still part of that seven.
Yeah,
okay, I got you.
So they're still part of that seven, but they could drop out. They could definitely see themselves. I can see them dropping out. But for now, I think that those are the seven that I think could be first-rounders for sure.
Okay. All right, so Reagor in the conversation at 33, then. That's good. He's got a lot of fans as well. But, of course, a lot of Bengals fans would prefer, after bringing in the franchise with the first overall pick, to beef up the offensive line. So there are some guys who I have definitely seen projected in the first round, but who could be there. A couple guards, Cesar Ruiz and Lloyd Cushenberry, another LSU player. We'll talk about a lot of those guys. And then from the tackle position, Andrew Thomas, and I'll throw in Josh Jones as well as being kind of a fringe, possibility in round one. Where are you seeing those guys falling, and do you think any of those guys are likely to be around in round two?
So, yeah, Thomas started off the process as the top offensive tackle, and throughout the process has kind of been passed over a little bit by some.
Yeah, there
were
people that wanted the Bengals to take him instead of Burrow, like during the season before the draft was finally like, oh, no, they need a tackle.
Sure.
And now he's like OT4 on, I would say, most boards that I've seen.
That's a surprise for me, for sure, because he had a very good season. And when you look at his Pro Football Focus numbers, he's one of the best pass blocking tackles in college football. So it's a surprise, but he tested pretty well. He has the length, and so offensive tackle 4 is where I have him as well. And I still view him as a top 15 kind of player. So he's taken a hit from top 5, but I still don't think the Bengals will have a shot at him. And Josh Jones is sort of a similar thing. And you know how I mentioned that. There's this big top 4, which is Thomas, and then and not in any order, but Tristan Wirfs, Mekhi Becton, and Jedrick Wills. Mm-hmm. And so after those guys go, I think that potentially those guys go in the top 15, then there's other teams that might want tackles, and that's what elevates the value of a Josh Jones. It elevates the value of an Ezra Cleveland. And so to me, I don't think that one of those top, 6 tackles will be around at 33 most likely. Cleveland's stock is up. Josh Jones' stock is pretty steady in the first round. But I think, like you were mentioning, that Cesar Ruiz is very likely to be available potentially at 33. And Cushenberry. Cushenberry is more like a mid-second-round player. Ruiz is more of like a late-first, early second-round player. It's a pretty weak interior offensive line class this year. But not weak enough that like the scarcity is pushing up value. So Ruiz potentially available at 33, Cushenberry also. I think Cushenberry has a better chance of being available at 33 than Ruiz. But if offensive line is your jam, those could be some guys that are definitely in the picture. I think Ruiz and Bond are both solid projections to be there at 33.
So not really necessarily a position of need with recent acquisitions they've made, but Joe Gladney, another Texas Christian player, cornerback, is somebody that has been popular to mock to the Bengals. Now, I think he might be CB2 to some people. I mean, the people that like him a lot, but he, he's on the shorter side, which, you tell me, but I believe can push some guys down sometimes. Where does Joe Gladney fall? Do you think there's any chance he makes it to day two?
Yeah, I think there's a really strong chance day two, early day two. He's the cornerback 5 by expected draft position. So Okuda's very high. You know, I think I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think it probably goes, Okuda.
Definitely Henderson.
C.J. Henderson. Trevon Diggs from Alabama is in there. And then I think A.J. Terrell is in there. Christian Fulton, then Gladney, and then Terrell. Gladney is in the 30s as well, so I project he could be a first rounder depending on how many cornerbacks go, but now I'd say more likely early second round. If you believe the research from Pro Football Focus, you can't have enough cornerbacks, especially even slot cornerbacks, which is a potentially undervalued position in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And the draft is all about getting underpriced assets in valuable positions. And so if the Bengals drafted a quarterback with 1, which I think they'll do, that's a very valuable asset. And having a cornerback at 33 is also a very valuable asset too.
Yeah, I was actually just listening to another podcast. I don't want to say the wrong name, but it's Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. And they were talking about how basically if you want an offensive tackle or you want a corner, you better do it in the first 2 days, because what's going to be left at the end of the first 2 days, you're highly unlikely to find anybody that's going to be a contributor for you. I think we kind of touched on it. You had really touched on it with tackles, but you look at guards and you can find guards on day 3 that are going to come in and start for you, early on. So, definitely 2 premier positions and, positions that go, and even with the depth, this has been mentioned as a good corner class. If you want one, you better get one in the first 2 days. I think there's going to be some pretty flawed guys that are left over after that. Let's stick with corners for a minute. Let's go to the third round. Let's talk about pick 65. And you mentioned slot corner being very undervalued. So one guy who who was talked about as like a round 2 pick and projected as a slot guy prior to I believe he broke his foot and being injured for the year was Bryce Hall. Where's Hall landing after missing about half the season with the injury and the fact that he's not able to, to visit teams and do medicals in their facility? Where's Hall coming in?
Yeah, so Bryce Hall had a very bad injury, for sure. Those guys, I think their rally gets pushed down, obviously because past injury is sometimes predictive of future injury, but then also they may not be early contributors right away. So Hall, I think, will definitely be available at 33, and there's actually, I think, maybe a decent chance that he's available in early round 3. But sometimes I think the mock draft community sometimes tends to underappreciate the importance. I mean, obviously they're not privy to individual like medical report information, it's kind of unfair in some ways. The draft community for the most part only can work with the data that we have. Now. He's the CB, he's cornerback 10 for me, like late second, early third. So he could be there maybe at 65, possible.
And we talked about Okuda. Obviously, he's going to be long gone before the Bengals get a chance at him. But Damon Arnett from Ohio State, is he a guy that could slip into the third as well?
I'd be surprised. He's my cornerback 9. So there's kind of a big drop off between Arnett and Hall in terms of the cornerbacks. So he's like mid second round. So to me, unless the Bengals were trading up in the second round, I don't think they would get him. So if they wanted him really badly, they'd probably have to pick him at 33. And I wouldn't be necessarily against it for sure. I wouldn't necessarily be for it either because, you know, I'm a fan of maximizing, you know, the efficiency of your, mm-hmm. your overall draft picks. And, you know, this definitely isn't a Drew Sample situation like last year where I viewed that as one of like the, probably the bigger reaches in the data that I have for the past few years.
Yeah. Did Drew Sample crash your website?
No.
You put his data in and it blew up and started smoking?
Yeah, I think he was like a fourth or fifth round guy in the data last year. And so to me, you know, one of the things that we've also learned from some of the PFF you know, research is that, you know, the guy drafted before or after you for the most part isn't that much different. And so to me, you know, last year I was kind of disappointed because it's not an efficient use of limited draft resources. So I would be fine with taking Arnett at 33 because he's not going to be there probably at round 3, you know, as long as they're not, you know, taking, you know, a player that goes much later than that or another tight end. Like, God, we don't need another tight end.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. So, all right, that brings us back to the offensive line. So as we get into the third round, like we said, there's definitely going to be a run in round 1 at tackle. And I would say it's probably likely in round 2 as well. You got guys like Lucas Niang, Austin Jackson, Prince Tagovailoa, Ezra Cleveland, who you mentioned before. If they're going for a tackle, like we mentioned, that's the spot that they're definitely not going to be able to get past round 3. Who of those guys do you think makes it to round 3?
So the guys that I have as being kind of late round 2, early round 3, so the guy that I don't think will make it to round 3 is one that you didn't mention, Isaiah Wilson, who's the other tackle from Georgia.
Okay.
Right now I have him like mid to late second round, but that could be early third because the Bengals' third round pick is basically a late second round pick. But yeah, it's a similar deal. Like Prince Teko Winogo from Auburn and Lucas Niang, like those guys I think are both shots to be there, but they're both, I think because of that, they're both developmental guys. Niang has been hurt this past year and he plays through it, you know, God bless him. But yeah, so there's that. And then Winogo is also developmental as well at Auburn. And in fact, the Pro Football Focus guys, who I'm a big fan of, if you can't tell, really like Jack Driscoll.
Yeah.
He's a much later offensive lineman that you can get in later than the third round, probably, maybe. But yeah, so Niang and Winogo are potentially guys that are available as offensive tackles and maybe Isaiah Wilson, but I think more likely it'd be either Winogo or Niang. And, you know, I know Bengals fans have been burned in the draft. You know, I was really not as – I know Joe Goodberry was not a huge fan of, you know, Cedric Oboehi, and I don't know as much about his opinion on Jake Fisher, but, you know, that really kind of failed pretty miserably. I'm willing to give, you know, the offensive line coach, you know, a chance a little bit. So, you know, for the most part, the question is, if you're happy with the pick, is do you trust the coaching staff? And for the most part, when the Bengals were good, I trusted Paul Alexander, except for that. After that, I couldn't trust him anymore. But yeah, offensive tackle, those two guys could definitely be there early round 3, late round 2.
Okay. I don't know if you've noticed this, but, you know, Lucas Niang, Prince Tagovailoa, like, do you notice guys with cool names get a bump early on, you know, before people have actually watched the film?
Well, the coolest names are actually almost always nicknames. Greedy Williams or Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. When I collect data, I look at some of the names that pop up, and I always try to keep a list of the all-name team. And there was one guy that came through that he doesn't have a crazy name, but there was a guy who I don't think he's going to get drafted. I'm not even sure if he'll get signed by anybody as an unrestricted, you know, free agent. But his name is Bill Murray. He's a defensive lineman from William & Mary. But, yeah, so there's some good names out there. I don't think there's any case to be made that the best names get drafted early.
Yeah, I when I was coaching at South Dakota State, we had a highlight film sent to us one time. It was a kid named Nick Nolte. Oh, wow. Oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, you can't make that up.
Yeah, right? So on the interior line, the names are kind of boring, but if they wanted to go guard in round three, Damian Lewis, another LSU guy, Jonah Jackson from Ohio State, and I'm gonna go ahead and call Ben Barsh from St. John's a guard, even though he played tackle at St. John's. What are the odds of one of those guys being around at pick 65?
So I feel pretty good about all those guys. Jonah Jackson and Damian Lewis are my fifth and sixth ranked guards, and I have them kind of both in the mid to late round three area. So I think you could definitely get them at 65, potentially. I feel pretty good about that right now. And then as far as Barsh, I think that drafting him at 33, or sorry, at 65 would be, well, 33 would be, it wouldn't be great either, but I think at 65, it's maybe a little bit rich by maybe like a round. Maybe when their pick comes around, I think at 107, which is the first pick after the supplemental picks of the third round for the Bengals, I think that's potentially more of a landing spot for him. He's also a developmental guy. So if you're looking for the players that are going to play right away, some of these guys, you know, I don't think necessarily Bobby Hart is going away this year is what I'm saying, which disappoints me as much as anybody.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we've got to look at things that way and realize that, especially picking at 33, you want to get a starter in the first and second round. I think in the third round, you're probably getting a year one starter, maybe not a D1 or a day one starter. But yeah, we got to realize that because I see that as a reaction to not only my mock drafts, but other mock drafts. Like, you know, somebody takes a running back in the fifth round and you're like, oh, we don't need a running back. Well, it's the fifth round. We need everything. You know what I mean? Like everybody needs everything. Like, you know, at that point you're really taking potential, you know, and hoping to strike gold with guys.
I'm not a fan of the second round running back, but I'm okay with fifth round running back for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I'm actually curious. So you said Lewis and Jackson were 4 and 5 for you amongst guards?
Five and six. Yeah.
5 and 6. And I'm sorry, guards and centers, do you pull them in together?
I can, but those on their own, well, the center class, so Ruiz and Cushenberry and Biotish, if you look at them, all the interior linemen together, you know, those are the top centers. And then there's a kind of a drop off until Matt Hennessy, when you look at the interior line together, and then you end up with players who are kind of in between. So the top ranked guard is Natane Muti from Fresno State.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So the interior line position last year was pretty weak too. And this year it's weak as well. So in terms of just when you look at like the overall strength of the position, it's just not as strong this year and last year. So like last year, you know, Chris Lindstrom from Boston College and Garrett Bradbury, from NC State went in the first round. Maybe there's one other one that I'm forgetting about. But, yeah, the strength of the interior line position the past couple of years at the top has not been as high. There's not a Quentin Nelson in this class like there was in 2018 who was a top five.
Yeah, there's not a Quentin Nelson very, very often at all.
But,
I was just curious there because, to me, I've got Lewis and Jackson I put them basically right behind Ruiz and Cushenberry in terms of interior line grades overall. And I think there is a drop off in between, but yeah, I wasn't expecting them to be quite that low on that list, but Moody makes sense. I know he's definitely a popular one. I've seen that quite a bit. Now getting back to some skill players, and I hate that term. I can't believe I used it, but that's all right. At wide receiver, it's been talked about how deep the class is. How many guys do we think are going to end up going in round two? And if you wait in on that pick at 33 and you're trying to get a Michael Pittman, a KJ Hamler, a Brandon Ayuk, what are the odds of getting one of those guys in round three?
So, you know, I mentioned when we talk about the first rounders, or like the potential second rounders who are probably likely not second rounders. I mentioned, you know, Higgins and Chenault. But after them is like the Jalen Reagor that we mentioned as well. And so Jalen is like late first, more like early second. The next one off the board who's wide receiver 9 for me is Brandon Ayuk. And so I don't think that he makes it past the second round. So, you know, there's a chance of the 3 wide receivers that I think have a good shot to be there is Hamler, who's like a late second, early third player. He's also, like, if you've been burned by John Ross, I don't know how much the team feels about bringing in Hamler because he's really electric. You know, if you watch, you know, and if you watch his tape, and I didn't watch his tape, I just watched him play live, and he's very, very, very electric. But he's small, and in the professional realm, you know, there's maybe some concerns there. But then there's 2 other bigger guys, like you mentioned. And actually, before Pittman, there's Chase Claypool, who some people even view as a like a big slot player or even like a tight end. So to me, the 3 guys that are the skill position players specifically that are kind of potentially going to be there at the beginning of round 3 and the end of round 2 are KJ Hamler, Chase Claypool, and then Michael Pittman. Those guys are the guys that I think kind of round out. And so when I look at my kind of the expected draft positions, you end up with something like maybe 11, 12 guys that could be, you know, drafted, wide receivers that get drafted in the first 2 rounds. It could vary quite a bit depending on if, you know, more of them are pushed up in the second round. Like, I could see there being 15 maybe, but I don't think it'll be much more than that potentially.
All right, so back to linebacker. So if they wait on linebacker, which I think is probably going to be advisable with you know, what you're saying, if Queen and Murray aren't there, a linebacker at 33, in my opinion, is a huge mistake. I think anybody other than those 2 guys is going to be a big reach there, and I'm not 100% sure I'd go with Murray there either at this moment. But Malik Harrison, Ohio State. Obviously, we love the Ohio State guys. Akeem Davis Gaither, trying to spit that one out, is another guy, and having a stress fracture in his foot, so he wasn't able to compete at the combine. But I believe he was rousing up boards pretty seriously before that. Willie Gay, who had a very impressive combine. Troy Dye, guy from Oregon, another really good athlete. Really, all these guys would be a big athletic upgrade for the Bengals at linebacker. What are the odds of pulling off one of those guys in round 3?
I think almost all of those guys could be available. So Harrison, I have as the kind of the fourth off-ball linebacker, according to expected draft position. And so I think the 3rd round is a fine space to grab him. And it's sort of, you know, I'd also add Jordan Brooks from Texas Tech in there. So, you know, Harrison is kind of the early 70s, potentially. You know, Dye and Brooks, Dye from Oregon and Brooks from Texas Tech, once again, those guys are, you know, more the late 70s. And then, you know, Gaither and Gay are both kind of in the probably like the mid-80s to mid-90s. So I think linebacker, I think there's definitely going to be those guys that are around, but those are solidly the 2nd and maybe even 3rd tier of the off-ball linebacker, which to me, as like I said, once again, like a fan of like an analytical view of the game, off-ball linebacker, unless you're amazing, like Roquan Smith or something like that, the position, or, you know, like Isaiah Simmons potentially can be, you know, those guys who aren't as good at covering the off-ball linebacker who are the classic run defender types, 3rd round is okay for that. And so I would agree with you that if Queen and Murray, and I know people are obsessed with linebacker, but it's partially because it's what you can watch on the broadcast tape because you see them miss and you see them get get gobbled up, but you miss some of the other things, like when a cornerback misses a run fit or something like that. The linebackers, I think all those guys could be available at 65.
Yeah, and I think that with linebackers, you know, the Bengals haven't had athletes at that position in quite a while. And, you know, looking at that and kind of projecting some of these guys, Akeem Davis-Gaither and Willie Gay fit into that mold of they're going to be hard for anybody to predict. Because like you said, the majority of us don't have access to x-rays of Davis-Gaither's foot. And we're, the other thing, you know, like you talked about the medicals, but I think the off-the-field stuff is a huge factor too. Willie Gay was suspended for half the season for an academic situation. What I've read was sounded like a tutor was doing his work for him, basically, and some other guys on the team as well that were suspended in that. And there was an altercation where his quarterback missed the bowl game because of I believe it was a broken bone in his face after practice. So those are questions that need to be answered, and those are things that we're not going to find the answer to on YouTube. and it'd be interesting this year too, because you can't have those guys in your facility. So, you know, do you feel good enough with Gay, the research you're doing, calling people, you know, and I've heard, I believe actually, I was talking about Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah, they were talking about this really positive feedback on what his character actually is compared to some of the mistakes he's made. And that the thing with the teammate wasn't as bad as it's made out to be. So, you know, do you trust those things? Is it enough without seeing the guy in person and shaking his hand? And, you know, I think a lot of times we make personal judgments based on personal interactions. And with Davis-Gaither, you know, do you feel good enough about the medicals without actually being able to work him out, without actually being able to have your people look at him? So it's going to be really interesting this year to see what happens with guys like that. I'm just going to throw out one edge, just in the interest of time. And look, you know, that's another position I've heard people say, well, we don't really need an edge. Well, the Bengals have three in the roster right now, you know, and Lawson might not be on the roster in another year, you know, just based on what his contract situation, and also he's an injury situation. And really, you see how the best teams are built, you know, they have really good D-lines. Like, a good D-line is a good defense. So Josh Uche from Michigan, I feel like he's a guy that a lot of people have been a fan of, but I feel like lately not as much buzz about him. Is he a potential at 65?
So, yeah, I think that he could be there at 65 right now. So he had a very good Senior Bowl. It was very good. I'm not sure if he actually tested at the combine. I kind of don't think he did.
No, he had an injury, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty clear watching him play that he's very good at what he does. As someone who's, like I said, I haven't watched his tape, but I remember there was a play that he made against Northwestern to basically end the game where he looks, it's the classic hoop drill that they did for the first time at the combine this year. But yeah, I think he's also a player that could be there. And if we had infinite picks at 65, you know. But yeah, I think he's one of a number of players that we've discussed who could be there. He's like kind of a late second, early third. And that's why, you know, having the first pick in each round means you can get guys that kind of fall through the cracks a little bit. So he could fall through the cracks for sure. He could be available there as well. But obviously, if they drafted Zach Bond at 33, then I don't think there's necessarily a decent chance that they would draft Uche at 65.
Yeah, and the two, they're going to bring you, you're going to use them in a similar way. I don't want to get too into a comparison on him, because I think Bond brings you a lot more as a pass rusher. But I think Uche has some athletic things that he can do, in coverage as well that are pretty impressive. It would definitely be an either or on that front. And you're absolutely right. I think we loop in Bond and people are like, oh, we'll take him. He's a linebacker. He's not really a linebacker. And either one of them maybe could play that position. But like you said, is it worth it? Because they're pass rushers. Let them do what's much more valuable. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So I avoided the safety position a little there. And I guess part of the reason I did was because I feel like it's a little bit confusing right now. Grant Delpit was supposed to be the next Derwin James. That's what everybody was talking about in October. He has fallen very far on a lot of draft boards. You know, McKinney is a guy who is seen as, you know, very versatile and probably the top guy now. But then you've got the you get the Senior Bowl coming in with guys like Jeremy Chinn, who you mentioned before, Kyle Duggar, lighting it up. And, of course, Antoine Winfield Jr. had a ridiculous season in Minnesota, obviously an NFL lineage. Where are the safeties falling on average in these mock drafts?
Yeah, so McKinney, I think, and Delpit are the two guys who could be first-rounders. I think McKinney more likely, you know, mid to late first round. He's kind of holding around there. Delpit has been on a downward trajectory. You know, and I think, you know, I think like the situation with Greedy Williams last year, there's some people who viewed him kind of maybe taking off plays and maybe he was hurt. Who knows, but I think there's a decent chance that Delpit drops into the early second round. But yeah, I think McKinney, there's a good shot that he's, I'd be surprised, if he was a second rounder. If he was, he'd be an early second rounder. But yeah, I think with the month left in the draft, I think there's more time for Delpit to fall out of the first round and maybe into the second. You know, with Williams, it was pretty easy to tell a little bit in a way, because he didn't have almost, I don't think he had any top 30 visits, which is very strange. But yeah, as far as how the safeties line up after that, you know, Antoine Winfield is the third safety that I have, and I view him early to mid-second round. Followed by Kyle Duggar from Lenoir Wren. and so he's a mid to late second round as well. You know, Jeremy Chinn, who we mentioned earlier, is probably the biggest benefactor in terms of the difference between average draft position pre and post combine, mid to late, mid second, late thirds. He doesn't have as many mock drafts as the other guys, so his range is a bit wider. That's why the range is kind of like mid second, late third seems like a lot, and it is. And so a guy that I kind of have a little bit higher than him right now is Ashton Davis from UC Berkeley. And so he's like late second, early third. So there's a mix of guys who the Bengals could get at 33 or 65. But, you know, they just signed Von Bell, and they have Jesse Bates, and they have Sean Williams, who's versatile and can play safety and linebacker. So I think with the signing of Bell, it kind of it changes the calculus when it comes to who the Bengals might target, because they've spent a significant investment on another Ohio State player in free agency.
Sure, absolutely. And I think that this is a position where I don't even know if they necessarily had a huge need at it before signing Bell, but they could have used an upgrade. And they did that. They went on, they got Bell. And I think Bell does a lot of the things that Sean Williams does, but he does them better. So, you know, they've got that. But, you know, it's still an area, because I think there's doesn't seem like there's a lot of consensus in the draft community. I wonder if you could get into a situation where all of a sudden you're in the third round and they're sitting there looking at Jeremy Chinn saying, "This was our number one safety. How are we not going to take him?" You know, so that'll be interesting. Another position that here's a position I have no idea what's going on with is tight end. It's been called a weak tight end class. I don't think I've ever seen anybody from this class projected or mocked in round one. And I feel like there's not really a lot of consistency even amongst experts about, you know, what the order is. So who are the top tight ends in this draft, and, you know, where are they coming off the board, and you know, what's the order looking like?
So, yeah, so Cole Kmet from Notre Dame, you know, he's viewed as the number one tight end in mock drafts. So expected draft position, second round, between like 50 to 60. So we call that mid to late, like more like later second round. So he's number one. For the longest time, there was a guy, people call him Albert O. Quigbunam from Missouri. Who was
your pronunciation is incredible, by the way. You're killing me with the pronunciation. I sound like an idiot, but go on.
I try. But more in the Bengals' backyard, tight end number two that's kind of made his way up, huge thanks to the Senior Bowl for that, is Adam Troutman, who's kind of the second tight end, and he's potentially a third-round player. The only other guy that people can kind of think of recently who kind of had that kind of rise was Adam Shaheen, who also played his college football in Ohio at Ashland. So Troutman second, Okwuegbunam third. Those are both in the third round. And the other guys I have in the third round are Hunter Bryant from Washington, who's kind of a small tight end that didn't test as well. And then Bryson Hopkins from Purdue. So a bunch of guys. I don't know if we'll see that many in the second round. I think that the third round will come, and then suddenly they'll start coming off the board a bit. But yeah, Komet number one. I think originally people were trying to force tight end, and last year we were kind of blessed with Hawkinson and Fant, both from Iowa. And this year, I think it's not the case. I think that there's some, you can find some value with some guys in the third round, but there's some good players. So Hayden Winks at Roto World really likes Harrison Bryant, the other Bryant, from Florida Atlantic.
I'm a big fan of him too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, this being a Bengals podcast, Josiah DeGuara, I believe I got that one right, from Cincinnati, has been a hot name in some circles as well. He's a pretty good all-around guy, pretty good blocker too. I think he tested pretty well. But Harrison Bryant, not quite the blocker, but he's a good receiver. He didn't go down easy, and definitely could be a playmaker in the right offense in the NFL. Obviously. The running back position was always kind of crazy as well. We don't really need to get into that, because if the Bengals take one of the top guys you're going to talk about, it's probably not good news. It's probably the Drew Sample pick of the year. You're like, what's going on? Let's talk about kicker though. Tyler Bass got a lot of praise after the Senior Bowl. Rodrigo Blankenship was the big name before that. So hard. Nobody wants to mock a kicker. and so hard to predict where these guys are going to go, because there's so few that are taken. Where are you seeing these guys? Is your model even going deep enough into the draft to be seeing kickers? Or?
So you're right. So it's very Bengals to be let's talk about kickers. I think people are still salty about Jake Elliott for sure. It's especially probably the specialist positions, so punter, kicker, long snapper, and then I'll include fullback in there too, are some of my least predictable positions at all. So I almost don't.
Sure.
They're almost never enough to have them even count in my model. So I usually have a threshold for 10 mock drafts from 5 different sources as a threshold for being included in the model. So it's a low threshold, given how many mock drafts I collect. And so right now, Tyler Bass only has 4 mock drafts. And so each of the last 2 years, I've had one kicker usually that makes it into my data. And this year, that's the guy with the glasses, Rodrigo Blankenship. And he has 30 mocks, but he's potentially 6th round. And honestly, I wouldn't draft a kicker or even a punter really, unless they were very, very, very special. And if they were, I wouldn't draft them until maybe the 5th, 6th, or 7th round, sometime very late day 3. And so Blankenship, right now, I don't think it's that predictive, but I have him in the 6th round. But to be honest, I'd rather keep Bullock, and then eventually maybe you sign an undrafted guy, and then you can use, because the draft is all about taking shots. And so if I'd rather have a shot at a position that's more valuable, and then bring in somebody who can compete with Bullock, or if you're concerned about it, I think he had a decent year last year. But kicker performance from year to year is probably not that stable. So to me, bringing a guy, I wouldn't draft him, but obviously I'm not making the shots.
Yeah, we got one of the best special teams coaches out there. He's got to do some scouting, find that guy. So, all right. Kind of switching gears a little bit here. Who are the players that are frequently being sent to the Bengals by the experts? Obviously, Joe Burrow. You better not be calling yourself an expert if you're not mocking Joe Burrow to the Bengals. But beyond that, who are players that are commonly linked to the Bengals?
So, yeah, so people who look at my site on Grinding the Mocks, which you can go to grindingthemocks.com to find, have noticed that I do keep a cumulative tracker up there. And the cumulative tracker says that Solomon Kinley, who's a guard from Georgia, is the number one guy that's being mocked to the Bengals. But I don't see that as the case. I think it's just a case of there's the kind of pent-up numbers that he got back in the draft, or people haven't been changing their mocks as much. So just looking at in the month of March that we're just ending, the top three players being mocked to the Bengals in the second round are players who we've mentioned, Zach Bond, the edge from Wisconsin. So like I said, I think there's a decent chance that that can happen. A guy that we didn't mention, Austin Jackson, who I view as potentially like a late first round pick, but maybe could be early second, another developmental offensive tackle from the University of Southern California. And Justin Jefferson, the wide receiver from LSU, but it's mainly Bond and Jackson being mocked in the last month to the Bengals in the second round. And in the third round, there's guys that we've talked about. Malik Harrison from Ohio State, the off-ball linebacker. He's a guy that's mocked to the Bengals quite a bit in the third round. Lloyd Cushenberry, who's mocked also as well in the second round, but also could be an option for the Bengals maybe in the third round, though I find it maybe more unlikely. And then also another linebacker from LSU, Jacob Phillips, who that's one of the kind of puzzling things about Patrick Queen this year, because in my early data, the linebacker from LSU was always Jacob Phillips. And then suddenly the national championship and the college football playoffs happened, and suddenly it was all Patrick Queen. So mainly, you know, it's Malik Harrison, Jacob Phillips, and Lloyd Cushenberry are the ones that are getting mocked the most. Not a lot of mock drafts in the last month that go that deep. But that's what they're showing right now.
All right. Well, we've come to the end here, so I've got to ask you the question I ask everybody. What is your Joe Burrow comp?
So I've given it some thought, and I have a good one that I think is mildly original.
All right.
So let's tap.
So not Romo. Okay.
Not Romo. So I'm tapping into the Zach Taylor tree. So it's the Mike Sherman tree, and the Mike Sherman connection I'm bringing as my comp here is Ryan Tannehill coming out of college. So Ryan Tannehill coming out of college, he had been a wide receiver at Texas A&M before taking over as quarterback in the middle of one of his seasons, and then had a strong senior campaign, and he was drafted number 8 by the Miami Dolphins, I think in 2012. So my comp for Joe Burrow coming out is Ryan Tannehill coming out of Texas A&M. I think it's a decent comp when you watch him play. Obviously, Joe Burrow, probably a little bit more athletic. Maybe Ryan Tannehill, I think they have kind of similar arms, but Ryan Tannehill, you know, just signed a big contract and had one of the more efficient years as a passer of quarterbacks in the NFL.
And Joe Burrow had almost the most efficient year ever. in the NCAA, so that's a good one, and I think because look, Tannehill's a guy because I made a Mariota comp and people jumped down my throat about it. I knew they were going to, right? But look, yeah, Tannehill's a guy who has some people that aren't fans, but it's important to remember that these are about play style and not necessarily what the result's going to be, what they're going to do in the NFL. So. All right, I like that, though, and I like your rationale behind it. So, all right, appreciate your time and joining me. Once again, it's Grinding the Mocks. Check it out. There's some really good stuff in there. I was kind of baiting you about the Solomon Kindly thing, to be honest with you there. But there's some interesting stuff on that site. Definitely follow Ben on Twitter. He does some really cool stuff, and the graphics he put out, I mean, maybe that's me, I'm just a visual person, but you know, the graphics that you put out showing how people's average draft position has changed over time, really interesting stuff to look at. So definitely give him a follow. Was it Benj Robinson too?
Benj _ Robinson too, like I said, very memorable. Benj _ Robinson too. That's how I like it.
Yeah, very memorable, except for me. I took too many hits in the head, I'm going to be honest with you. And I'm not even joking because I don't make jokes about that stuff. But all right. So appreciate you joining me. We've got another episode coming up later this week. Should be out Thursday afternoon to Friday morning, somewhere in there. So definitely come back for that. Lots of great content throughout the Cincy Jungle platform and Orange and Black Insider. So keep checking these out. We've had some awesome guests lately across, including Ben today. And we've got a bunch of draft profiles from myself and the other Cincy Jungle writers that will be dropping soon. So if you need to bone up before the draft, which is right around the corner, make sure you stick with Cincy Jungle and check that stuff out. So thanks for joining me, and keep coming back. Yeah, we coming for what's ours. You hear the crowd, we coming for what's ours.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.